Hi, welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? It is a podcast dedicated to the analysis of failed jokes. A lot of comedians have analytical minds, and we will do a joke that we think is going to work, and when it doesn't, we ask ourselves, why didn't it work? Because some jokes work in certain contexts and then not in others. And I've recently become friends with this dude who I'm going to interview today, who's extremely intelligent. He does stand up, and he's also a physicist with his PhD from Caltech. And we'll be at the Improv, and we'll just be pounding beers. And the conversation always ends up heading towards wormholes and really intense stuff, and people get excited. And so I wanted to talk to him today about the science of bombing. Like, you know, scientists usually view things as objectively as possible, borderline sociopathically. And I want his perspective on the science of humor, because humor is so non-scientific. It's so gray that I want him to enlighten me. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Kevin Hickerson. What's going on, Kevin?
Hey,
KP.
Oh, you're having me.
I'm going to plug your Twitter first, though. It's KP Hickerson, at KP Hickerson. His tweets are funny and super intense and smart. I was going to ask you, when we were just chatting for a second, you were talking about a joke that you recently did that tanked, and I want to know what the joke is and why.
Okay, so the joke is, the first part of the joke works great, and I've told it lots and lots of times. And
what's the first part?
First part is, these women quizzes. Women give quizzes to men sometimes. I think you even told a joke that was similar to that at one point on one of your sets.
But oh, I did. Mine was. I probably wrote mine significantly earlier, but that's
yes,
fine.
Yes, you go did.
On.
Absolutely.
I'm just joking. I'm totally joking.
So the joke. My wife's really smart, so she has more sophisticated quizzes. Like, there's the easy ones, like, oh, would you sleep with Beyonce if
no one
can find out? And everyone knows, no, you're not supposed to do that.
Right.
But this joke, it's a little bit more specific, and it's if there's a version of her, you're in control of a train track. There's a version of her tied up on one track, and
right.
There's a version of her 15 years ago tied up on another track. And so, you know, it's a...
Who do you let live? Who do you let die?
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like it's a lose-lose situation.
So when you pick either one of them, you're...
Yeah, because the first one you say, oh, I'll save the younger one, you know, because women and children first, I guess.
Right.
And then, of course, she gets mad because...
It's like, why not me now?
Yeah, why not me now? You only like me younger. It's like, okay, fine. So I'll pick... I'll kill the other one.
And then what'd she say then?
And then she's like, that's even worse because that means we never met, never had kids, never got married.
So can you say that you love her so much you would build a third track? And then just... Because that's the type of shit my brother does to always win arguments. He'll do a new option that wasn't already prepared for by the person, and then he'll just throw that out, and then they just look really puzzled.
That's pretty good.
So what did you...
I have a punchline, though. I
mean, what's the punchline?
There's another punchline where I say, well, no, see, that's where you're wrong, because if I kill the younger you, you don't grow to be the you now that asked me this damn question.
That's funny.
So that part worked. But then I had a tag from a previous joke where I also... She asked me a question. I didn't... do that intro, so I can't tell you what the thing is. But
right.
The whole point was, in the other joke, I knew what her preference was, and so I threw that out as a tag, and I thought it would just be, like, to me, it seemed just so clever and awesome that there's this parallel universe where I already knew what she wanted for the other question, and it was just, I was so shocked. It wasn't just like it bombed. It just immediately, everyone's just staring at me, just like,
right.
Like, they didn't even know that was supposed to be a thing. It was just...
Do you ever feel like that your knowledge of physics makes, like, you're like, obviously this is funny, but the crowd doesn't know what a parallel, because I don't fully know what a parallel universe is. Is that the situation where, like, every possible thing that could happen exists in some sort of universe?
Well, yeah, it could be that. And when physicists talk about it, that's what they're referring to as a possibility. We don't know that that's the way it works. That's sometimes called the many worlds hypothesis.
And so when they didn't laugh, what's the tweak now? Do you just bail on that, or
I'm not going to bail on it. I think I just need to lead up to it and explain it better, and then I think it will work.
Like, give a 10-minute lecture on parallel universes
right.
To really prep them.
Yeah.
And do you have time travel bit? I was working on a bit about how time travel clearly causes Parkinson's disease because of Michael J. Fox. Mm-hmm. I haven't done it yet.
We talked about that one.
Yeah. What's your time travel bit?
Well, the one with the train is pretty much, you know, plus that's time travel.
Cause do you ever do one about Michael J. Fox though, or no?
I did do a joke about that. Yeah.
What was your joke?
I said there's all these cool stuff that's invented in the new, in Back to the Future 3. Or is that 2? That's 2, right?
Well, which one?
The 2? One that's now, right? That's 2015, Back to the Future 2.
Yeah, yeah.
And you got the hoverboards.
Right.
And there's people who've actually built a model hoverboard. I've toyed with some hoverboard stuff. There's also flying.
You've played with a hoverboard?
Well,
shut up.
In my head. I mean, I have some designs.
But it's possible, though? It is possible?
Yeah, I'm not going to broadcast out all the details of how to build.
No, I mean, it's like, it's possible, though.
Yeah, it's possible.
Is it with, like, thrust? How?
You can do it with magnets if you do it right, and conductors.
Interesting.
Hey, I'm not gonna do blueprints right here on your podcast. That's a very bad business strategy. But so my joke is just, I bet Michael J. Fox is thinking, you know, maybe you should have predicted cure for Parkinson's.
I like that. But do you ever feel like people have, because dudes like you that are very cognitive can know that there's no there's nothing touchy about that joke. Like, it's obviously a joke about time travel, but the word Parkinson's will trigger someone's emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And are you ever surprised by that? Because you're like, in the context, there's nothing bad, but because of a certain word, you react. Do you ever feel that way?
Yeah, that joke definitely, when I've told it, it gets a really... I mean, that gets a groan from me. I mean, it's still funny. People still think it's funny, but oh man, you're not supposed to talk about that. That's not cool. But what's funny is, yeah, maybe they should have. You know, it's like the point of the joke is,
right?
You know, we put all these novelties in the future, but that's actually something that genuinely would have been.
Yeah,
nice
and
to
you're
have
not
right now.
Like, there's certain comedy that attacks victims, and there's certain ones that just mentions victims.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you just mention, like, a victim of a disease or something, people will recoil even if you're not attacking or mocking them. And I always think that's... one of my first jokes I ever wrote in college was, if I owned an abortion clinic, the slogan would be, if he doesn't pull it out, we will. And that's... people would die laughing and then groan. And I'm like,
wait,
I'm not...
I was trying to hold it in.
But I'm not advocating... I'm not... that's a joke on slogans. It's a hyperbole. I don't know what the right word is, but it's doing like a catchy phrase about a very hot button topic is clearly the joke, mm-hmm. not like me advocating either way. Right. So I bailed on all that style of comedy very early on because I felt that people don't like to separate with context that much. There's mm-hmm. an audience for them. You know, like you'll see Burr and all these guys do great bits based on an audience's ability of contextualizing.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times they don't want even to hear the word abortion. So I just acknowledge that and move on.
Yeah.
So
it's extra scary for me. I don't even know if scary is the right word. But one of the things I really worried about trying to do comedy is that I'm also a professional scientist, and we're judged very harshly about a lot of things. I mean, we're expected to be like not just politically correct, but almost like leaders of political correctness.
Right, and right, think, right.
Mostly having to do with, supporting like women in sciences and things like that. And a lot of comedy is not necessarily goal.
Yeah, because if you pull and I was just talking with one of my friends about that. If you pull a quote out of context, you're just dead in the water.
Because
I mean, obviously, you're not a sexist or hateful person. I'm not a sexist or hateful person. And it's like, but you could say a sentence that in context is not sexist, but could be read later of context. And
nowadays everything's projected out on the web instantly. It's all, you know, logged.
Everyone's
everywhere.
A politician now.
Yeah.
Everything is
exactly.
This quote means this. And you're like, no, but in like Lenny Bruce, when he used to be charged with stuff, he'd be in court and he would, He would do the bits because the lawyers would read what he said publicly and he'd be like, no, but you're not doing the bit right. And then he would perform them for the jury. But then they stopped letting him do that. And that's when he would be like charged with things because they would be like, according to this, you said, is there any spics in this room? And he's like, no, but you're reading it wrong. And then he would do the bit and they'd be like, oh, that's fine. But just written on paper, it would just be horrifically offensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so...
And people are very outraged all the time now.
They're addicted to outrage.
Yeah, it's like a weird combination. Because you can... Not just can anything you can say can be tweeted out, but you can immediately get offended about something and tweet it out also in the same amount of time.
Well, I think our entire political framework is based on outrage at this point. Where my theory... And I'll probably get slack for this as well. But my theory is Republicans and Democrats are set up where the Democrats are fiscally awful and the Republicans are socially awful. So people just pick which one they want to hate more. Mm-hmm. And then that's where they align.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, Republicans are anti women's rights and, you know, gay rights and all these things that, you know, people are like, I can't tolerate that. And then Democrats are – they have horrible spending problems. They, you know, they won't make necessary cuts to things, but they're socially much better. And so people will just – they're not aligning themselves with who they are. They're aligning themselves with who they hate, where they're like, fucking Fox News. They hate, yeah, you know, me. Yeah. And then the Republicans are like these fucking overspending pussies, you know. Instead of being proud of what they are, they're defining themselves by what they hate. And I think that that is really bleeding over into all of our civilization.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where it's like you're defined by what you hate, not what you are.
Yeah, I made a map. I'll tweet it out after this. But I made a little political map just as a joke where it was predicting the next election. It was just states where, you know, the fraction of those states were absolutely never going to vote for another Bush against the other states who are no way are going to have another Clinton in office.
Right.
And that's what it's going to become. I mean, totally. We can already see it. There's no way around it.
There's no way. That's what it is. And it's like you'll see all these good things that the Democrats do socially, but then you'll see the overspending. And then, you know, and then the Republicans will always because they already know what they are. So they'll, no matter what the data is, they'll be like, well, they overspend, blah, blah. And then the Democrats know who they are, so they'll always be able to defend it. It's because of Bush that they had to overspend. And they're just so aligned with their branding, and it's branding based on hate, that they will defend their people no matter what the data is. Mm-hmm. And I think there's that in science as well.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, Galileo, Copernicus days, especially back when the church would rule everything, like, they would have empirical data, and then people would... Even Einstein. I mean, Einstein hated, you know, what was his quote? That God doesn't play dice?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in reference to quantum mechanics.
Yeah, where he would, you know, he debunked a lot of Newton stuff by showing that everything's relative and that, you know, at different speeds, things operate differently. And then he came up with relativity, and then people started disproving him, and he would hold on to his shit. He was like, no, like, you have... You know, you definitely can explain this better, but when people are like, you don't always know where an electron will be, it's like a chance. Mm-hmm. What was that, a field?
Yeah, a wave function. It's
called. Right, yeah. And he was like, no, there's definitely a way to align tiny physics with big physics. Mm-hmm. So what are those two physics called?
Well, there's gravity is the big... This is a classical theory,
right?
And there's quantum mechanics, which includes...
That's the tiny, tiny stuff,
that's
right?
The tiny stuff that includes everything that's in the standard model. So it's basically everything we can do an experiment with here on Earth.
Right.
Everything that they ever made at the LHC is all from the standard model, but never from gravity. And so there's... Luckily, there's mathematical ways to combine the two, but there's no experiment that shows what the right way to combine them.
Yeah, because isn't gravity like a really weak force compared to magnetism, strong force, weak force?
Yep, absolutely. So that's actually – so I study weak forces in general,
right.
But gravity is so weak it's not even on the scale of what
it's like 40 to the 10th or some shit.
Yeah, it's very small. Yeah. So I study something called the weak force, which is what's responsible for a nuclear decay and for neutrinos, and probably for dark matter, although we don't know that for sure.
Dark matter. I'm obsessed with that shit.
Yeah. But even that is way stronger. Even though that's one of the weakest things we could possibly measure in the lab, that's still orders of magnitude weaker than gravity.
Yeah, like if you were just studying atoms in a hypothetical like space with no planets, you probably wouldn't even notice gravity.
Yeah, sure.
It's pretty weak.
Yeah. When you do an experiment with colliding things in a collider,
right,
we basically don't see any evidence of gravity.
Wow. But so why can't you guys find dark matter?
Specifically because it interacts weakly. That's its problem. The strength at which a particle of dark matter interacts with another particle is very, very week.
So it just passes through everything.
Yeah. So it can, because most of spaces, most of us, we're empty. We're, you know, at best, we're little spheres maybe, but we might even be little made up of little tiny points. And those points are separated by a huge amount of distance. And so the only thing that causes things to run into each other is some kind of charge.
I almost stepped on a snake today. Because I was just thinking, yeah, like, in your, when as you were describing that in my head, I was like, it's kind of like running through a desert and thinking you're going to run headfirst into another human. The odds are so low.
Yep, exactly.
And then, like, as I was daydreaming, I was jogging today, and my foot almost was right on a rattlesnake, and I had to jump it.
Yeah.
So that was me.
Right. So that's a really good analogy, the running in the desert. So
yeah, like,
so
people
why
can't
do
even
you
imagine how hard it would be to run into another atom?
Right. So the reason, so you might say, well, so what are you doing when you step on a snake? Because obviously we don't pass through a snake.
Right.
You step on it and you squeeze it and it gets upset. And
then
so,
it bites you and you die, and I don't do my podcast.
Right, exactly. It's a disaster. So, but what's actually happening is inside of you and inside of the snake, you're made up of protons and electrons that both have charge. And that charge interacts via electromagnetic force. So when you step on a snake, it's actually all the little charges pushing at each other in
different
directions.
Right.
But as soon as you take that charge away, like in the case of dark matter, now you don't have anything to really collide with anything else.
You go right through it.
You go right through it, unless there's another force that's, you know, at some point allows them to exchange, you know, bump into each other.
So like hand on, like we should be passing through everything if it wasn't for repelling forces.
Yes, exactly.
And yep. I read a book, The Science of Interstellar by Kip Thorne recently.
Yep.
That was your teacher.
He was my teacher. Yep. I learned all about general relativity from him. He's a amazing teacher. I was really lucky to have him.
And he consulted on Interstellar.
Yeah, he did more than consult. I mean,
he wrote the
original one, and then Jonathan Nolan and
because Spielberg originally was on board, and then that didn't work, and then the Nolans came on board.
Yep.
And according to the book, the Nolans were pretty receptive to the science of it. Like,
yeah,
there was
he basically said, "I want at least, you know, I want everything in the movie to at least have a plausible scientific
like it could happen."
Yeah. And they talk about that in the movie too. So a lot of people who I don't think people caught the. I thought it was clever the way they said this is the fact that the character's named Murphy, you know, after Murphy's Law.
Yeah, yeah.
And even though I don't think the way they paraphrased Murphy's Law is exactly the way it was originally,
right.
It still was like an important point of the movie that anything that can happen will, not what is likely to happen. Because the things that happen in the movie are not necessarily likely to happen. They were the only way that could happen. And that was an important thing, is the movie existed the way it could because that made it self-consistent. And if you took out a single element out of that, it would just fall apart, not be meaningful. So
that's awesome. Have you done consulting on movies?
Yeah, I consulted for the movie Thor, and I've done short film.
Wow.
Inventors.
Thor, I feel like Thor isn't as precise just because the hammer, isn't it made of like a black hole?
Neutronium is
wouldn't that just pass through the Earth?
No, because it doesn't weigh very much. And
it doesn't weigh very much.
No,
you got to explain this.
Yeah, this is I'm going to get in trouble here, though, because there's a lot of people like me who want to have their pet explanation.
Okay.
So I have what I thought was the explanation, which is that it's made out of the nuclear equivalent of graphene, which is a new chemical that's causing all kinds of advancement in technology. So I'm envisioning
that. Is graphene stable?
Graphene's stable, yeah, but it's a chemical.
Okay.
And I'm envisioning something like graphene, but on a much, much smaller scale and a much denser scale.
Okay.
And so there's this stuff called neutronium, which is really only believed to be made in like a star when it collapses, so a dead star. It's one step above a black hole. So even when we knock
on
it's
like a neutron star.
Yeah, a neutron star, yeah.
Okay.
Well, neutronium is made of mostly – a neutron star is made of mostly neutronium.
So escape velocity is lower than the speed of light, but it's still super dense.
Yeah, it's very, very close to the size of a black hole. So gravity is still intense at the surface, but you run into the next force besides electromagnetism. So we can't run in through this wall, but there's another force after that called the strong force. And the strong force is called that because it really is the strongest force we know about, and it's what keeps nuclei together.
Interesting.
And so all the energy that's released, you know, from the sun burning.
So his hammer just like can really do some damage.
Yeah. So it's very, very dense.
How much would his hammer weigh? Like
this is where it had to come from, is that his hammer is like very specifically something like 37. I'll have to look it up, but it's like 37 pounds or so. It's like very. It's in the comic book as known weight.
Is it weight?
Yeah. And so a lot of people are like, "Well, how can it be made out of neutronium if it's, you know?" But one of the nice things about neutronium is it's also presumably very strong. So there's nothing that says you can't make it hollow. And
interesting. Like it could just be a few. It can be a few atoms thick.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is it made out of unobtainium?
I'm not even going to address that one. That name just.
You guys get
me.
So pissed off about unobtainium.
That one, yeah. Come on.
James Cameron is less accurate than some of these other directors.
I wouldn't say that. I think that was.
I mean,
a little,
unobtainium's absurd.
I thought that was kind of lazy.
Right.
I wouldn't say James Cameron is not careful. I mean, he actually was a physicist, I think.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, I think he studied physics, at least in college. We need a fact checker on that.
So you got into stand-up mostly for public speech. Was that what it was? Or do you just love it?
I just wanted to do it. I like the attention I get
from that.
You can give science talks and get some attention there too, but it's just not the same. I mean,
it's just pure intensity.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. We met because I was doing stand-up.
Exactly. So. Yeah. It's a great way to just like be in the world.
Yeah.
Where you can go to a bar and strike up a conversation with somebody, but typically it's about whatever is immediate in your environment. Like, mm-hmm. Hey, look at that guy.
Yeah.
Versus when you do stand-up, someone can watch you and know who you are, and then you can make friends with people that probably are more likely to be someone that you have the same interest in.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also just – I think the public wants this kind of thing more from scientists now. I mean, like,
oh, yeah, science
Neil deGrasse
is becoming,
Tyson
is, right.
and Bill Nye, they're all successful because they understand how to mix entertainment and education at the same time. And just everything is so flashy and instantaneous nowadays that you're competing with that. And some people think that's a bad thing. I don't.
Well, I think astrophysics is starting to border on religion a little bit.
You think so?
Well, yeah, because now that you're going back to the Big Bang, you know, science has a faith element to it because – as much as you guys can explain, there's that much more and more that you can't. So you have to kind of have a belief that, like, one day you can explain everything.
That's true, because I feel like the opposite. I think if I have faith in one thing, it's that I know not everything that I know about is going to be explained by the time I die. I know that. Like, there's no way. I just don't see any scientist who's going to be like, oh, okay, we're done, you know.
Right.
I mean, just the over my lifetime, lots of things have been explained, things I didn't even think would be explained when I was a kid.
But do you think?
But at the same time, more mysteries showed up out of nowhere.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. It's every explanation, there's five more mysteries that come from it.
Yeah.
And
I mean, when we were kids, the Big Bang Theory is really straightforward. It was, you know, there's a point.
It's a singularity.
And there's a singularity, and we all came out and flew out. But now, because of very detailed measurements made on something called the cosmic microwave background of the universe, sort of like the last flash of light from the Big Bang,
right?
There's a lot of structure to it, and so people have gotten really good at measuring the structure. And the structure has revealed that it's not simple at all. I mean, it's just out of nowhere. It's extremely complicated. There's likely this phenomenon called inflation, which is really weird.
Do you think there's more hubris in physics or religion?
Oh, absolutely religion.
See, I think it depends on the religion and it depends on the physicist, I think. But I think I think there's just as much hubris to be like, there's the Big Bang, no God. Because it's like, well, what banged and why did it bang? It's like, we'll figure it out. Versus like, if you believe in a specific God, like literally, there's a lot of hubris there.
Well, I guess that's the thing, is I just see most religions is doing that. Well, it's like, I can handle that I can't disprove all sorts of different things.
Right, right, right.
But I find it weird that it's just like, well, you guys are just as arrogant for thinking there's no God, which is not even something a lot of scientists say. But at the end of the day, it's like, okay, but you're actually telling me how I'm supposed to dress and like what I'm supposed to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you listen to
kill and who I'm supposed to not kill, you know, that's absurd. Yeah, that's where I don't. But that's what most people do. They go like, well, I just don't think there could, you know for sure there's no God. But by the way, these following things are wrong and these following things are right.
Right.
Why is that not, you know.
Well, fundamentalism is obviously wrong. Like, listen to Bill Nye debate Ken Ham.
Most fundamentalists would disagree with you.
Oh, yeah. But see, that's
although they'd
like,
always agree that the other fundamentalists are
no, because I think science can explain everything to a point.
Sure.
And then after that, it gets very hazy.
Yeah, but the thing I can't stress enough for me anyway is that the number one assumption of science is that you don't just know something. You have to try and figure it out. And so
right.
There's always this just came up with a guy who he got a lot of controversy for this because he took the American Physical Society and he backtracked, or some people calling it backtracking on the American Physical Society's stance on global warming.
Right.
And a lot of people got angry about this because he was part of the committee. His name's Steve Kuhn, and he's from the same lab that I used to that I got my PhD at, Kellogg Radiation Lab at Caltech. And I've met him a couple of times. He's a really smart guy. Anyway, he got a lot of controversy because he took the word incontrovertible evidence that global warming is
right.
happening. And this just made so many people mad. But all he, you know, mostly what he said is there's no such thing as incontrovertible in science because everything is always debatable.
Well,
you can always discuss
something. That's the beauty of science is it disproves itself in its own nature.
Yeah.
Because we are – the observers are by definition flawed. So everything we, you know – see and feel, we know it's, you know, like that one color that doesn't exist. What was that? Like, it's kind of like pink, like magenta or something.
I haven't heard about that.
Well, you know, the light spectrum's in a straight line.
Oh, but we turn into a circle.
Yeah, so there's a type of pink that doesn't exist. So,
right, magenta, yeah.
You know, when you like look at anything, you're flawed. So science needs, science disproves itself by its own definition. That's kind of a rabbit hole, but it's kind of intense.
But that's why I was bringing up the Big Bang. I
mean, right.
Like, in my lifetime, I've seen that theory completely change. And now it's even getting more interesting with people suggesting that there's evidence for, like, the multiverse or that there may be many Big Bangs. You know, and most religions haven't really upgraded their stand on the creation of the universe in at least
the people that think that 4,000 years ago there's a worldwide flood are fucking insane people.
But there's a lot of them, I think.
Yeah. But it's the metaphor people that I don't think are as wrong as everyone makes them out to be. Where it's like, what is God to you or Jesus or Muhammad or whatever you believe? Like how that's a window into spirituality, I don't think is as bullshit as a lot of scientists make it seem to be. Because I think a lot of the pure atheists and the like angry atheists come from a religious background and they're reacting. It's kind of like what we were talking before where you're defined by your enemies, where it's like the nuns were such assholes that there's no way there's a God versus, you know, almost like if you go towards a wall and you can only go halfway each time, you'll never reach the wall. I feel like science is a little like that for infinity where it's like you can define, I bet in a few hundred years, we will be able to define everything in our surroundings to a ridiculously accurate way, but you can never get to that source.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
you're completely right.
Right. And I think that's a
factor. This is going to be a real boring podcast.
No, it's cool. A lot of people, because I feel like
we need like an asshole to argue with.
I think it's good to agree sometimes. I think a lot of people will force a disagreement just to be entertaining, but I think it's better to, you know, to be honest.
Yeah, actually, you were talking about politics earlier. I had an argument with someone. I'm not going to name him, but I had an argument with somebody about saying, like, people need to be more angry about politics. And somebody in another country, and they're saying specifically about Americans that we need to be more angry about our politics. And I just, like, wanted to tear my hair out. I was like, are you kidding? Like,
right.
The one thing we need to do is just to relax and consider that just somebody else might have just a different point of view.
Well, yeah. I mean, open-minded people are not open-minded to closed-minded people, which is a hilarious irony.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, a great example was the dress, right? Like, to me, that just encapsulated.
What's the dress?
That meme.
Oh, how tribal people are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was just, I thought it illustrated politics perfectly.
Perfectly.
It's like,
that was
people are like,
yeah,
of course this is red.
Right.
And of course,
it's perfect.
Black.
I did a whole essay on that. It's
people,
it's like, you can become tribal no matter what. And it's, And it'll never stop. And for people to think that they can make it stop are absurd.
Yeah.
We will define ourselves based on anything. Like, race is just one way. Mm-hmm. And if we got rid of racism, there would be another ism immediately. I started a thing on Facebook just to see what people did, where I said I didn't respect men under 6'3". Because I'm 6'7", so I'm like, any man under 6'3", I see as a child. And people just start, at first they were like laughing, because I did a picture of a monkey dressed as Napoleon. And I was like, any man under 6'3 looks like this to me. And within like a couple days, people were like drawing lines in the sand, where they're like, no, like, basically it's like, fuck you, Tully. And it's like, it became like, it felt racial really fast. And I just was like, wow, people are just such tribal maniacs.
Yeah, and they've done those experiments. They've done those experiments with shirt color.
Or eye works. Color, yeah.
It works. I mean, it's so easy to get people to do this. You just pick a little thing like that, you know, and you just put it in there, and they immediately go into this like group mode, you know, like, these are the apes on my side and like these are the apes on their side.
Right.
Gonna, like, we're going to bash their heads in, you know, for no other reason other than you have to.
And it's easier to get an audience when you hate something than when you want to unite people. But I can't go down that hate road. It's just too intense.
I think part of the reason we're seeing so much outrage nowadays, I actually think it's kind of a good sign. Like, I don't like that it happens.
Right.
But I think the outrage culture is kind of coming from the fact that we're kind of not that actually – we're not really outraged. I mean, we agree on what the things we're really outraged. You know, like everybody hates ISIS. You know, it's like almost universal, I guess. You know, so that's not like a controversial thing. And so people aren't, you know, worried about that. But then these little things come up and they're trying to, you know, it's like we want it to be part of some bigger thing just to.
Yeah, I think
because there's almost nothing else to do.
Well, we want to matter. It's full bellies, empty balls shit.
Yeah.
Where it's like our lives have gotten so easy that now and you guys have to tell us why we're here. Physicists have to explain the fucking Big Bang better. Because that's why people keep arguing, because it's like, If you don't have a fight. I was talking to my friend recently about men and women in relationships who start arguing all the time when they're not having enough sex.
Uh-huh.
'Cause people just want passion no matter what it is. Where it's like, if you're fucking a lot, it's like, and then you stop fucking, it's like, then you just start fighting because it's like passion, but it's just the other direction.
Well, we did just have a big fight about the Big Bang. Just nobody, I mean, I think just the public didn't notice that much, but it was huge.
What was the fight?
The fight was over experiment called Bicep 2, which is down in Antarctica, and they discovered these something called B modes, B for magnetic field, these modes in, again, the cosmic microwave background. And this was really exciting because they thought this was signs of the gravitational waves creating like an echo from inflation. And inflation's been strongly suggested, but it was never really like a fact. You know, we don't treat inflation the same way we treat, you know, the existence of dark matter or something. It's a nice theory.
So what is inflation? What's expanding?
Inflation is just that, so there was a Big Bang.
Right, and everything's
expanding.
And then
a very small amount of time after that, it expanded really, really fast.
Right.
Way faster.
It's like,
yeah. Then it slowed down.
It's like the mark after World War I.
Yeah. And then it started slowly expanding faster and faster after
that.
So
why did it slow down?
It's shaped like a bell.
Why did it slow down for a little bit?
Well, it has to do with this thing called the inflaton field, which is all theoretical. But basically, it goes into an unstable state where, you know, it inflates really quickly. But the thing is, this is all just – this is a theory with not a lot of data to support
it. Right. And then you go to Antarctica and you see all this shit.
Yeah.
And the ice?
So the – no, not on the ice. But the air is really clear there. That's why they did it there.
Nice.
Yeah. So Antarctica – the South Pole is like one of the best places to observe space without going into space. So lots of experiments are there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's because there's basically no weather there.
And there's no ozone layer either, right?
Yeah, exactly. But that's
that hole works in our advantage.
Yeah, that's a symptom of the same thing. It's like because of, you know, if you watch one of these like climate model videos of Antarctica, it's pretty cool. It's like there's wind just swirling around Antarctica, but there's almost nothing happening inside. And a lot of that snow.
It's the biggest desert. There's no precipitation.
It's an extremely dry desert.
Right.
They have a tiny bit of snow every year, but it's really, really tiny. I think I just heard that it was a half an inch, something like that.
So it's like they have about my penis a year. Hard.
Yeah, and it's thousands of years old. I don't know if that's also the same as your penis.
Yeah, that's the nickname for my penis. I'm like, you wanna,
the ancient one.
Want to take a look at thousands of years old? That's all like what I call it.
Old and she.
Moral of the ancient one from Neverending Story.
Right.
So they discover this shit, and so now there's a fight over what, like how fast it's expanding?
No. That isn't even the thing that what they fought over is whether they saw the gravitational waves or not.
And does it get heated like
it
Bravo
got heated,
Channel?
Yeah, because
it's like housewife shit.
This is where so they were sitting
it's like,
on
DeGrasse
this.
Tyson, bitch, you don't know me. It's like Atlanta Housewives.
They were sitting on this data for like 3 years, keeping it secret.
Right.
And then they released it, and they were so confident that they released it. And a lot of these people are friends of mine, so I was really excited.
Do you ever see cat fights between physics people?
Yeah. Oh my god, every
like,
time.
Do people get heated?
Oh yeah.
So it never stops.
Yeah.
Even the smartest people in the world act like trash.
I think the coolest thing you could do actually that to really promote science might be like just do something like this. Like we have these phone meetings.
Right.
I have phone meetings with people all over the world. That's like about a third of my week, I think, is phone meetings. But yeah, they get heated. So I think except for the fact that we're talking about really technical stuff that wouldn't make any sense.
Right.
There's heated.
Are they passive aggressive or are they like straight up like, fuck you, Gary? Are they
I think one of the things I like about physicists, also hate about them, is they're usually way more like that. Like passive aggressive is not a thing
they get
that
intense.
Physicists do too.
Yeah, because isn't a huge physicist like a former plumber? Who's that guy? Who came up with, what did he come up with? Did he come up with string theory or something like that?
The former plumber?
He used to be a plumber. And I was just watching a special about him because there are these two guys that came up with this theory that there's universes of these flat things that will touch, and that's what a Big Bang is.
Uh-huh.
And then there's some dude who's a
that's
plumber.
Brain theory.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. And then there's another dude who was a plumber.
Leonard Susskind.
Yeah, I haven't met him.
Yeah, I feel like any plumber.
That's
any plumber, I feel like can do a haymaker.
Yeah,
because plumbers are legit. I mean, they have a lot of forearm strength.
Uh huh.
And they're not scared of being around pipes full of shit.
There's two famous physicists I haven't met. There's more than that. But the two that I regret never met is Susskind and Witten.
What about, have you met Hawking?
Yeah.
Is he cool? It takes a lot longer for him to talk, right?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Because if you're going to type, I mean, it's always like in the movie, it's just like, and then the universe was, and I'm like, that would take an hour for someone to type with one finger.
Yeah, it's a pretty big struggle for him. But.
I love that he banged his nurse. Like that's the fun. It's like,
did you see the other movie?
I hung out with the dude who played him at the Art Director Guild Awards.
Oh,
he was
awesome,
super nice.
Awesome.
He won the Oscar.
Yeah, he was great. He captured him
such
so
a nice
well.
Guy.
Oh my god,
because a lot of those smart dudes love comedy. Like if you do stand up and like they see you, they're like bonded to you because I don't know, they like the game of comedy, like how to figure shit out.
Yeah, and in the end, especially when you get to that level, that's most of what you're doing is just trying to convince people. And one of the best ways, I'm sure you know this, is in comedy, you're kind of trying to make a point.
You're a salesman.
Yeah, you're just trying to find the best way to package a point you're trying to make.
Right.
And comedy is just the best way to do it.
So do you think your comedy career will help you in physics?
So far, I think it's helped me a lot.
Because there's a lot of Asperger.
It's a little distracting, but
don't you think there's a lot of like Aspergery guys in physics?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, same with engineering, where it's like I call them seven-letter word guys because Scrabble, they're always getting seven-letter words. And I had an opener recently who had mild Asperger, and I kept calling him seven-letter word guy, and he was laughing. But because it's like when you play them in Scrabble, they're constantly getting seven-letter words. I'm like, how do you see that shit? But I feel like some of these people are so smart, but they can't articulate what they're saying.
Yeah, and
they're kind of like, obviously, I just said 6.994424, and then and then you just have a good salesperson could convince someone that the Earth is flat based on emotional triggers.
Yeah. So yeah, like social interaction is not something that physicists are guaranteed to be good at.
So how like with conflict,
I mean, that made it hard for me to go to school. I mean, that is one of the issues that comes up when you go to a school like Caltech,
right?
That's like way at the top of the list of problems. It's just
interaction
is not necessarily healthy the way it's set up. I mean, I would not give up going to Caltech for anything. I love that school a lot,
right?
But
it's like Imitation Game. Like that dude was so like sociopathically efficient that everyone hated him. Remember, did you see that movie?
I haven't seen it yet.
About
no.
touring?
No.
Where he
I know
was,
what you're talking about. But
yeah, like he would just say insane shit to people, but it's just because he was so logical. And it's like,
so you imagine like 800 of those all talking to each other.
Do you think that, so what's that conflict like? Because a lot of times those type of people are like, I call them 1 to 10ers, where they'll like start, they'll say something benign and then say something psychotic because they like blow up because they have no filter. You ever, is that what happens?
That
or
happens
do they,
sometimes, yeah.
Or do they just shut down and just start being like, meet, 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 meet? Or,
that happens too.
So like if they start fighting when they're like, you know, the inflation, we saw it in Antarctica. There's gravitational waves, you motherfucker. And then it's the other person like, fuck you. Or are they just like, meh. Or they make like meeping sounds like beep, beep, beep. Overload, overheating brain.
There might not be so like, you know, personal attacks like fuck you, but they'll just get up and like, this is clearly bullshit. You know, that
really?
Kind of thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Did they ever
I went to 2 talks like that, and it was a little uncomfortable when it finally ended because the end. So basically what the critics said very early on was, look, you're not accounting for dust in our galaxy correctly. So
right.
It turns out that you just something as simple as dust between us and the edge of the universe. You know, there's a lot of stuff.
Kansas knew it. Dust in the wind.
Right.
they saw it coming.
Yeah. So they said, look, you made this measurement. That's great. But you didn't account for all this dust. And it was in particular, it was the other group that has a satellite that's measuring almost the same thing, but not as well.
So the government sprayed all of Antarctica with Pledge. And then they did it again. And then they discovered that the gravity was actually not there.
Yeah.
But
the compromise in the end was like, okay, some fraction of it.
I hate the compromises.
And, well, that's how like, science usually.
Oh
ends.
Yeah, I mean light. But, it's a particle and a wave.
But that's what I was saying about
what it is.
That's what we need more of. That's how science is done. We should do more of that. Like in terms of global warming, I think like. Making it political was absolutely
worst
the
possible
worst
thing ever.
Thing because it stopped
lobbyists.
Being yeah, it stopped
yeah.
being you know, a thing that two groups of scientists could, you know, sure they'd be heated and argue with each other, but in the end, being scientists, they probably would have had some soft compromise.
All
and
scientists
instead,
agree that it's definitely happening. Like the fight
well,
isn't
no.
about I well, I mean, it is a greenhouse gas and greenhouse gases do cause warming. I think the how fast it's happening and what to do to stop it is the argument.
But why does it have to be attached to a political party?
Exactly.
When did that happen?
Right.
Why did that happen? It's like,
I mean,
oh,
if you go back
if you're
far
a Republican,
enough,
you're
it's all
not,
money.
Like you're not allowed to believe in global warming. And
right,
if you're
right,
a Democrat,
right.
you have to believe that it's like a huge conspiracy to destroy the tropics or something.
Well, as soon as big oil gets successful, like a you know, solar power that is profitable, you'll see that shift immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Because these people aren't bad. They're just aligned with profits versus social causes. You know, no one's like evil. It's not like they want the world to get warmer. It's just, it's kind of like you'll see in history really awful people doing awful shit. And then you really learn about it and you realize that if they stopped, they would have died. You know, like Julius Caesar kept taking over Europe because if he stopped, he would have been tried and convicted and killed. And so you start thinking like when you're... You know, it's always a snowball effect where it's like it's easy to later be like, why didn't they just stop killing or taking over shit? It's like there's human Ponzi schemes where as soon as you stop, everything falls apart.
Right, right. Because you got so vested in the controversy. If the controversy goes away. Then
right. And it's like if big oil fails, your kids don't go to school, you know, so you're like. All right, I want big oil to win. And if it doesn't, you go to like jail.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Well, so I guess that's why I'm not so mad that people work the way they are now. I was really mad at the time when I saw people politicizing it way before it needed to be. Like,
right.
I'm not going to name names, but like Al Gore's movie kind of made me mad that way. Because
he's also a hippie. He's like, you know, he's in private jets and
sure,
air conditioning.
But that aside, I mean, that movie, it had a lot of information for the public about global warming, but I felt like it just flat out connected it to his political career. And that's not necessary.
That's why people on 7-letter word guys are actually better because they're not attaching it to their own agenda as much because that Asperger actually is like helpful.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know, because if someone's they're like, this is just a fact and I'm not connected to it versus like two people can, you know, Ferguson's a perfect example. When you saw, I mean, it's without question that there needs to be major changes in police. Like any asshole would know that. But when you when you saw that dude got killed and everyone had that, you know, Michael Brown, they're like, that was tragic. When you found out that he had just committed a felony and a violent felony, he had just robbed a store and how that didn't change the enemies of the cops' thoughts at all. I'm not saying switch the other side. I'm just saying it had no effect. That's when you knew it was branding. And it was like, they're never going to listen to anything. And the switch, the flip side happened with that other dude who was choked to death in New York, where like the more information that came out, the more he looked like a victim. Mm-hmm. And the people that were pro police didn't switch at all. They didn't hesitate. Yeah. They're like, oh no, he deserved that. Mm-hmm. And then it showed the video and it showed that he was just selling cigarettes and at no point posed a threat. They didn't pull back at all. There's no reason.
So this leads me to another thing I'm a little worried about the future direction. So this is related to the outrage culture. I think another cause of outrage culture is that it's so easy to ignore now too, because like it feels like it's constantly being fed us, but you can just be like, oh, I'm going to defriend that person or something like that.
Oh, just get off the computer and stop watching the news.
Yeah. So this leads me to something like a dystopia that I'm more worried about more than say like the Terminator style robots. Stephen Hawking says he's worried about artificial intelligence.
Right.
I'm not that worried about artificial intelligence. I'm actually worried about something that's already happening that's way scarier.
What's that?
And that's just artificial scripts that go off. They're not intelligent. They're like the bacteria of the computer world. And they're already in things like Facebook and Twitter. You know, they're little algorithms.
Interesting.
They're little algorithms that give you what you want. You know, like they allow
our cortisol addiction in our brains.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the reason I say they're not intelligent is because we're almost not designing them. I mean, we're almost letting them design themselves now. And
rhetoric. It's a rhetoric disease.
Yeah, yeah. It's like this little just bacteria that's filling every little niche of our lives, giving us what we want to hear all the time. You know, so it's like,
oh yeah, and then we're insulated in our tribe, without any new information,
without even knowing it, and that's part of I think why people can be so outraged. It's just like, you know, who knows? Wouldn't it be hilarious if that dress controversy turned out to just be somebody seriously fucking with us,
Stupid we are. Yeah.
Well, imagine that it's two photos, and they're just like. The controversy is people are like, dude, I can see that. It's a picture of a red,
right.
A red scarf. And then somebody's like, that's clearly a purple elephant. You know, can you imagine how insane that would be if the machines were just like, no, we're fucking with them. We're just showing them red scarves sometimes.
Well, yeah, because I see that in Facebook. I mean, comics have such a diverse Facebook friendship thing because at least at first, it's just anyone who added me I'd accept because I figured they were my fan and let's just do this. And so mine is so diverse that I'm not insulated at all because it's not based on people I know. It's based on people who like my comedy.
Uh-huh.
So and you'll see the outrage algorithms like you're saying. And if you're just insulated, you will just anyone for or against guns, whatever side you're on the opposite side, you can't even listen to their argument.
Mm-hmm.
And my comedy is definitely based on finding more similarities and differences. And I'm also scared of this, too, because I think a lot of branding success comes from identifying yourself with something people hate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like we're against these people. And I can't stand that because it's so ignorant. I was talking to a guy in D.C. this weekend, definitely a smart guy. And I'm opposed to Obamacare. And I could just see his blood boil. And I gave him my side and I'm like, listen, you guys make it so that anyone against Obamacare is aligned with people that are against poor people. And they're against public works programs to take care of people without resources. And I am not against that at all. I'm against the fact that all insurance went up because of it. You know, like my insurance went up. Everyone I know's insurance went up. People got dropped. Now it's like almost impossible to get certain functions from your insurance that previously were great. And he's like, yeah, but a third of poor people now have insurance that didn't have it. I'm like, yeah, but what does insurance mean? It's about care. Like, do they have health care or insurance? Because that's just a benign word. That doesn't mean anything. And so we're just fighting, and it's getting heated. And I'm like, we probably believe the same thing, and we're screaming at each other. I'm arguing against a policy. You're arguing against a concept, and we both probably have more in common than we think we are, and we're just two monkeys, you know, set to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't even know, you know. I'm like, I'm against Obamacare because of – whether it's the Republicans' opposition or I don't know, you know, what the causes are, but it definitely doesn't work. And I'm like, and you're against what I'm saying, because you're saying that it's basically like I'm the Death Star, and I'm saying that if you're poor, you should die, because that's the rhetoric.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like,
because you're instantly grouped to the extreme or the maybe
oh
not
totally.
The extreme,
I mean,
at least the
when you
the
keep boiling down,
the
right?
Side.
Because the hospitals will always charge the same thing no matter what. It doesn't matter if it's insurance or not insurance. When those quote unquote poor people or people that didn't have insurance go in, that price doesn't change. So when you're dealing with like that X factor, whether they're going through an insurance or not going through an insurance, that doesn't change. So you can argue that it's tort reform, that it's like because there's so many malpractice suits, that's why everything's so expensive, or the fact that, you know, hospitals are basically a monopoly and they can charge you $1,000 for one ambulance ride and you have to pay it even with insurance because the bureaucracy is so insane now. Those are the issues. It's not, do I want to see poor people die in the street? And all these like algorithms make people think that any opposition to your cause is the worst possible thing. It's kind of like when you're dating a paranoid girl, and if you don't call, it means you're fucking someone else. That's the worst possible thing you could be doing. Like you're assuming, oh, you didn't call at this time, that means you're fucking someone else. Versus you're assuming, you know, 99.99% you're not fucking, it's something else. Mm-hmm. You know, you're doing a podcast or you're in the car with no reception, but it's like, that means you're cheating. That's how we're getting with politics, where it's like, if you say this, it means the worst possible thing.
Mm-hmm. And now imagine robots doing that on our behalf.
But it's already happening because we're doing it. We're fueling
it. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why I don't think it's going to be artificial intelligence. It's not going to be intelligence. It's going to be just a thing that we do to ourselves. It's just going to be us putting this sludge in between us. I mean, imagine how bad it's going to be when you know, already we're on our phones all the time, but, you know, like things like Oculus and everything are coming. I mean, imagine
what's Oculus?
Oh, Oculus is awesome. It's this Oculus Rift. It's this thing that Facebook bought. You don't have to get the fancy one. You can get cheaper ones.
I'm guessing it has to do with eyes because of
yes,
Oculus.
Yes, yeah, good yes, yeah. Thank so, you. Yeah, so it's these little lenses you put on, and then there's a screen. It's basically just virtual reality. Like all the shit they said they were going to do in the 90s and never happened. Remember in the 90s, like,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That actually might happen now that we do this. And if you try it out, it's awesome. I mean, it's really good. The main thing that's made it possible now, and it wasn't in the 90s, just now we have really high resolution screens. So you basically need like a 4K screen for this to work. And
right.
Now that we have 4K, it works and it's awesome. I have a friend who.
And so you put them over your eyes, and now you're just like...
Yeah, you're in a virtual reality.
I mean, porn's got to be insane.
Yeah, it is. Oh, there's a great video of old people watching
porn
on Oculus Rift. It's great.
And it's like, so that will put out... The Viagra industry is done.
Yeah.
Like, you'll just see a 90-year-old man with just a rock-hard hammer. And it's a hammer made
just
out
twitching,
of...
It,
yeah, and it's made out of neutrino. Like it's like the Thor hammer. Neutronium. It's a neutronium hammer. It's the weight of a fucking Earth.
Yeah. So when we're walking around with those or Google Glass or whatever it is that it actually ends up working, you know, that product didn't work out. But something like it's going
to work. Do you think there's going to be a backswing, though, where it's almost like you go back to a feudalist state?
No.
Where things accelerate till people are like, this is scaring me horribly. Let's just start... Because my brother actually...
I don't. I think there's going to be like a group of people who are into that.
Right.
And then everyone else... Like
me.
Yeah. But then everyone else is just going to be like, okay, fine. We'll see you later. We're flying on the moon or something. You know.
Because like, my every time I visit my brother, it's like his kids, they're very happy people. And it's like his kids will... like he's a lumberjack and he teaches high needs kids in middle school. He's an unbelievable guy. And... his wife was a teacher and quit to raise the kids. And now she makes like wooden toys and sells them on Etsy. So, you know, he cuts down trees and teaches and, you know, he always smells like bark and he makes his own shit. And his kids are like playing with wooden toys that their mom makes and they breastfeed for like way too long. And like, you know, we hang out with his buddies who don't have bank accounts. You know, they built their houses. They're completely off the grid.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people talk about being off the grid, but these dudes legit are.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like that's almost a reaction to these algorithms where they're like, bro, I'm out.
Yeah.
And all they basically, I think there's two types of people. There's enjoyers and endurers, where some people like endure life and others enjoy life, where they're like, I'm going to endure my life. And these people are like, I love fucking hiking and skiing. So I'm just going to work enough to do that. And I'm just going to burn wood and drink. And I'm not going to have a savings account.
But I feel sorry for those people in that what we're gonna become. Well, maybe not you, but what people who
I'm kind of in the middle. I'm like Lafcadio and Shel Silverstein's, where I'm like the lion that can hunt and now is neither.
I would be scared for the lumberjacks because of what the rest of the people who are not unplugged are gonna become. Because
right.
I think once you have this group that's getting always with the information that they want. But it also they're constantly outraged, and they also have just instantaneous power to just convince. Like they can tweet something out, and then
right, but it's like
that
the
day
Mike...
you get like half a billion people to like your tweet.
Right, but it's all bullshit, though. It's all
I know. But
Mike Tyson had a great quote: "Everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face." Like when you see these
but
people,
what if you don't even know you're punched in the
no,
face?
No, but you just rip their throats out.
Yeah, but
it's like when you have let's say someone with an Oculus goes and tries to take over. These lumberjack woodsy guys shit. And they're like, I'm outraged because you cut down a tree, even though they already just planted another one and it's totally renewable. And they come at them thinking that, rhetoric is everything, words. And those dudes would just punch them in the face. sometimes that happens to me where after shows, someone will get in my face. 99% of the crowd's happy and they're pumped and they're high-fiving. And then one person is like, you ... super intense, mental thing. And they'll just get in my face and I'll be like, bro, get away from me or try and fucking do it. And they're like, no, but you... I go, buddy, no more words. I'm like, you either fucking throw down or leave. And they just look stunned where it's like... sometimes people forget that it's a physical world and the strong forces are the only reason that fucking our fists can hit face.
Uh-huh.
I mean, our atoms should go through each other, but they don't. And sometimes it's great just to wake people up and be like this, if the oil runs out, whoever's stronger can take your shit.
Yeah.
I don't think the oil's running out, though, which is actually almost bad because we'll just keep getting it.
We've gotten pretty good at getting... a lot more. I mean, we used up quite a bit of the easy oil, but in that time, we've put a lot of...
We know how to get the oil.
Yeah, we know how to get it out.
Yeah, it's like everywhere.
And then you're seeing that, sand oil, fracking, things like that. There's a lot of oil to get out. So, yeah, now the scarier part is just that there's way less incentive to stop burning it now.
That's the problem. Yeah, there's no incentive to...
But it's, there's been some really good news. It didn't get a lot of attention.
Give me some good news.
I will.
We need good news.
This year was the first year that fossil fuel use didn't go up, but the economy did. And world economy, world GDP. And that's great because that's something that I used to work in solar power, not so much anymore because I went back to school for physics. But one of the big issues was always, is this ever going to actually be profitable itself,
right,
or is it just like a feel good technology?
Yeah, it definitely will.
And it turns out I strongly believe, just from doing back of the envelope calculations, me and other people that I worked with. We were really convinced the main reason you want to do solar is because you're getting free energy rained down on you.
Right.
That's the reason you should do it.
Yeah.
And
because it's so inefficient to make fossil fuels because you have to photosynthesis brings it into the plant. The plant lives its life. It dies. And then it has to be decomposed and millions of years of that to get that little tiny fraction of the original sun energy.
Right. And it is basically just sun energy.
It's photosynthesis compiled over just unbelievable amounts of time.
Right. And sure, yeah, there's a lot of it. There's definitely a lot of coal because it's millions of years of stuff.
Right.
But yeah, it's an absurd thing when we're just getting it anyway. It's there. We don't have to get the stuff out
of the
ground.
Right. It's like the chick that'll fuck you. And you don't have to date them. What's the incentive to date them? getting in our age, it's not, I don't really think the same way anymore because then you start shifting into family gear and shit.
Uh-huh.
But a 22-year-old guy, it's if a girl's blowing that guy and doesn't say, and she's like, you don't have to date me, but I'll keep blowing you. Why would they stop that? That's the same with fossil fuels. It's if they're going to suck your dick, why not go with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, so this year was the first time it proved there's actually a motivation to do it.
Right. That people start choosing it. And that's when you become a man, when you're like, listen, mm-hmm, I'm not going to have you suck my dick anymore for both of us because it's bad for both of us. Your self-esteem's getting hammered down and I'm not, going to the next level of manhood, but with monogamy. So let's just end this relationship. But your instinct is, oh, you'll just suck my dick without, making me like be monogamous. And that's what fossil fuel is.
Right.
It's like, no, it's free shit in the ground. We don't need to spend money on R&D.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, we do.
Right.
Because Bono told us to.
Right.
But I'm not anti-oil. I mean, I drive a car. I'm in planes. You know, I got blood on my hands. I'm not going to be an asshole. But obviously we have to – I just think it's way more efficient to be anti-oil.
Yeah, sure.
But not be against oil people. Like, I know oil people. I'm not like, you're evil. It's like, no, we're all fucking evil and good.
Yeah. I mean, I think a reasonable way to look at oil is just like, well, yeah, you can pay this person but who just owns an oil
How about the fact that that fact is not out there?
Why do that when you can, if you already own land, you can.
Right, it's free.
Yeah.
But see, that's the thing is, why isn't that fact more out there? Because it's not an outrage fact. It's a hope fact. Another thing, deer population is 500% higher than it was in the 70s. You'll never hear that one. I mean, nature is definitely doing pretty good in America.
My wife lives in – her family is in New Jersey, and they have like a backyard that it's just like tons of deer just inbred all over.
Oh, they're like everywhere. There's so much deer.
They're constantly trying to get the deer, you know, hunted and –
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one thing America's definitely doing well is reforestation and deer.
Yeah.
You know, like there's one study said that there's more trees here than when Columbus landed now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I heard that because the people who cut down the trees weren't people. It was I think it's the mammoths. I hope somebody's not going to get pissed at me for this.
Right.
Well, if you are, just tweet back to me that I'm wrong. But my understanding is when the mammoths showed up in North America, this whole place used to be just completely covered in trees.
And they just did.
And just one of the things
them.
They do is they kind of, you know, terraform it for themselves.
Right.
Because they just knock them over.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is people are just good at this shit. Everyone who's like, nature's beautiful and humans are evil. It's like, no, we're just winning at it. You know what I mean? Like we were prey and we thought our way into being predator. That's phenomenal. Like everyone's killing us. We're just these slow, weak, hairless monkeys that just keep getting fucking killed by everyone. Like a fox could kill us. Like that's pathetic. And then we like really thought about shit and we're like, no, we're going to do booby traps and spears. And now we win. And now we have a sense of survivor's guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Where we were prey for so long that now that we're predators, we're constantly hating ourselves and we're searching algorithms to prove our... You know, the fact we're evil and we're just not evil.
Right. Please like me, Earth, or something like that.
I got to ask you about another thing that you're excited about is water in the solar system. Is this good news?
This is fantastic news.
Okay.
When I was a kid and growing up and just until a few years ago, I thought the probability that we'd find life outside of Earth was really low.
I thought
maybe on Mars, and then it started to get kind of depressing with Mars. And then just in the last 3 years, there's been a number of probes that have gone out and made detailed measurements of different moons of Saturn and Jupiter.
Was that Titus or – no, not Titus. What was that one? The Io or –
No, not Io. Well, Europa has a lot more water than I thought and –
It's under ice though, right?
It's under ice, but that's actually a good thing because it's protected from radiation.
Cool.
And then it turns out Pluto has a huge amount of water.
It's a dwarf planet, though.
Yeah, I know, but we might have to upgrade it just because of this alone, just because it's so awesome.
Pluto's sick of the ups and downs.
Yeah. Can you imagine how, like, it's just like, oh, you want my water?
Oh, now you want me back?
Yeah, okay.
And then it's too late to apologize by Timberland comes out. It's too late to apologize.
When I was just a cold...
Oh, yeah, we're doing a long one. We'll wrap it up soon, though.
Yeah.
No pressure.
No. I see, this is, you know, Why Didn't They Laugh originally was me analyzing jokes that bomb very specifically and showing how it grows. But now I just like hanging with other kind of mental, like, wormhole guys and women where it's like, let's just analyze. I just like talking about this shit a lot. So this is great. Okay, tell me more. We got to talk more about water.
So Pluto's got more water than the Earth, turns
more
out.
More than the Earth?
More than the Earth. Yeah, can you imagine? So now it's just like, oh, you didn't like me when you thought I was a rock.
But now it's super watery.
Yeah. Now it's not that. In case of Pluto, it's frozen. It's all frozen. And then on top of that, now they think there's very good evidence that actually there's been water on Mars this whole time in the ground. It's just been very, very salty. So it didn't really – it's not like – So for a long time they said, well, look, there's this ground, but it's way too cold. It can't possibly
right.
But it's so salty that it actually can stay liquid. So there's actually a lot of very salty.
Do you think there's life?
My guess is on Mars, no. Maybe not, even
on a microscopic
there,
level.
There might be. Yeah, there might be. But I definitely, like right now, I am.
There's amino acids in comets.
Yeah. No. Life can survive leaving the Earth from a volcano, from an asteroid impact. I mean, that's
Scientology.
We know that. Yeah. Well, it's also a science fact. I mean, we can take, right. There's a lot of microbes on Earth that can handle very extreme environments. And one of them is space. It just begs the question, why does a microbe need to live in space unless that's where it used to live?
Exactly.
That's how things work. I mean,
because that's evolution.
Yeah.
Because why else would it have that?
We had to build, the only way we could get into space is we had to invent a way to do it. But these things just can survive in space. And so when you take the combination of water all over the solar system and rocks that have life on it, and the fact that they found microbes living on the outside of the space station, I mean, this makes it almost impossible that there cannot be microbes on these moons.
What if the Mars water is all just pure jizz? Like they send a probe and they're like, you guys aren't going to believe this, but this is just trillions of gallons of male human jizz.
That Philip sounds like a real Greek myth.
Where it's like Apollo was right. Angry at the, right, at the right. Tribesmen, so he jizzed all over Mars and made Venus watch.
We probably learned the cleaned up version, because I think I was taught like, oh, it's the blood spilled of the soldiers or something.
Right. But
probably the Greek version was just like, yeah, it was just like they're killing each other and it was just like jizz.
Oh,
everywhere.
If you read ancient myths, it's just every god is super rapey and jealous.
Yeah.
So I was like, but he took her anyway. And then burned her face so no one else could love her. And that's like Zeus. You know, and everyone's like really into that
Zeus
guy.
Zeus was a dick. I mean,
God. They would just take other forms and bang the peasants and then be like super jealous when the peasant would bang someone else, even though they're banging constantly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were and they were constantly killing each other and their children. A lot of incest.
Mm-hmm.
So we come from a pretty checkered past. That's why we're searching for self-hate confirmations on Facebook, and that's the algorithm that's going to fuck us. All right, do we have anything else before we have to wrap it up? So basically, when it comes to comedy, your scientific method, do you bail on a joke when it doesn't work?
Yeah, I do, which is – it's frustrating that I do that because I want to try out new stuff all the time.
Right.
But I also want to do well.
Coward.
So,
what?
Yeah.
So when something doesn't work.
You've been doing this longer than me. So you get to, you can just safely.
No, I've done that for a decade.
Yeah.
Everybody does that. I think there's a real turn in a comic's career when they stop bailing on shit the first time.
Yeah. Okay.
Because it's almost like oil. Like when you first do your first hour, you can tap these reserves that it's really easy. You have like 20 years of material. It's like easy. You've been thinking about it your whole life. Your second hour, you start fracking.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're like, okay, I got to write something based on the last 3 months. And then your third and fourth hour, you're like offshore fracking, fucking mining, And that's where comics end up. When you see like the Burrs and the CKs, like they'll keep like banging on one concept until it works.
Uh-huh.
Because it's so concepts become so valuable. And so, yeah. So
well, I hope I'm in that region because, I mean, you asked me about this other, if I was going to drop this other punchline, like, I'm not going to. I have faith that the audience will eventually understand this part of.
Do you ever feel like that there's, you might.
Parallel universes. I just have to make it. I don't blame them for not getting it. I blame myself for not correctly setting it up. So
right. It's like
sense.
We're poison pills. We need a better out casings.
Yeah. So I'm going to keep doing it.
Do you think you could make a joke about them not understanding where you do the parallel universe thing and then the joke is like, yeah, my wife didn't understand either. So then I had to explain parallel universes. And then maybe the joke is how intense it is to explain that.
I could, except my wife understands parallel universes.
I know.
So that part
was real. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
All right. So you can be reached at KP Hickerson, middle name Peter. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone wants to, argue with you, because people love arguing. Oh, opposing forces in comedy and physics. I wanted to talk about that. Like, I think people hate what they are and what they hate about themselves. Okay, like in physics, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever feel that there's social physics? I'm trying to like wormhole this shit.
Social physics.
Where it's like everything, there's a, like the laughter reaction comes from like a darker, way too intense. I won't even go down that road until I have a better idea. Okay, so we touched on movies, Kip Thorne. Science of Interstellar can be a whole thing. We don't have time for that.
Yep.
Popularity to science. Science is getting very popular.
Oh, can I mention
awesome.
Something about Interstellar, though?
Yes.
We were talking about people just getting, you know, like you said, the guy in the audience who just got mad, you know, whatever. I got people mad at me for defending the science of Interstellar. That was like a new level for me. I mean, I got people really angry.
Oh, yeah. And
I just couldn't believe it. I was like,
it's crazy.
This is a movie. I mean,
it's like when the Red Sox won and they couldn't handle the win, their first World Series, where they didn't know how to show joy, where they still were like, and I saw Bill Maher do stand up right after Obama beat Romney, and he was still talking about Romney. I'm like, buddy, you won. Like, stop. It's like they make this huge multi-million-dollar popular movie about, like, they're debating how fast the neutron star is spinning to, like, cause some sort of rift. And people are like, no, the slingshot neutron star had to be a black hole or had to be bigger. And people are like, shut the fuck up. Like, you got a movie about your crazy shit. And they couldn't handle it.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Water in the solar system. Last thing before we bounce. Oh, how tribal people are. We're fucked up.
Yeah, we didn't do that.
And steering asteroids.
Yeah, so just as I mentioned with life, is likely on asteroids. I think we're going to find it. Or it's on moons anyway, wherever there's liquid
water. Got to tap that asteroid. That's a fucking hashtag.
That's great.
You can tap that asteroid.
That's what we need to do, basically.
Yeah.
We need to
tap
that asteroid.
Well, people want to do mining and shit.
Yeah, well, that's true, but there's this other side.
It's pretty inefficient.
There's this other side that we're learning more and more is that, I mean, we saw this in Russia with the one that, you know, injured 1,000 people, and more evidence is being found that, you know, there's a lot of asteroids out there that we can't see. And what's amazing is we're actually in a lot of danger from asteroids, but because of the way the human mind works, we don't see it that way. And the reason is because we see things in terms of, you know, my grandmother lived to 100, so, you know, she didn't get hit by an asteroid, so it's not dangerous.
Right, right.
But what's funny is it's very irrational.
We're fucked both directions. We're like, we're going to get Ebola, even though statistically there's no chance.
Yeah, right.
And we're definitely not going to die of an asteroid.
Yeah, exactly.
It's weird.
Exactly.
We're scared of the dumbest shit, and we're not scared of the actual shit.
That's because this is well studied. People don't understand probabilities the way they work. So one of the stats I like to tell people, and it's kind of weird, like everyone's scared of planes crashing. You know, like that gets CNN news.
Do they smoke cigarettes to calm down before flying? People are fucking morons when it comes to stats.
So here's what's actually true. You, anyone listening, are more likely to die from an asteroid than you are from dying in a plane crash. And if you tell people that, I just saw your eyes twitch. There's no fucking way that's right. There's no way.
No, I buy it.
But it's true. It's just that you take – they're complete opposite extremes. People are flying planes all the time, and your chance of dying in one is very low. So you have roughly, you know, how many people die from a plane crash every year? 100, 200, something like that. So it's roughly, you know, 100 out of 5 billion people, 7 billion people. So that our mind can handle because we're constantly seeing a reminder that it's happening. But the fact that all 7 billion people plus whatever billion ants plus whatever billion dolphins, all the life on Earth, that part only happens every million years or every multi-million years. So that just – our brain can't handle that because we're not seeing this epic disaster every
– Yeah, it like really throws the stats.
Yeah, because we don't have memory.
Because when someone dies, when an asteroid really kills shit, it's like everyone goes.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no like small thing. I guess the Russian one was small. But
what's funny is we spend so much time and attention and money on – airline safety, when that's actually extremely unlikely that you as an individual will ever die in a plane crash. That's very, very low because only a handful of people ever do it. But we spend comparatively very little attention and, you know, both media attention and also finances on just doing the one thing the dinosaurs couldn't do, which is just get out there and move an asteroid. And NASA's
– Could we do it?
We could absolutely do it.
I feel like Elon Musk could do it in the afternoon.
Yeah, but right now that's the problem is like there's people like, you know, like Elon and like me who are like – motive on this, but we end up sounding like crazy fuckers talking about it, you know, because it's like, we got to avoid the – there's no way to like say, you know, this asteroid's coming right for us in a way that doesn't make you sound like a nutcase because it's this
but
kind
what
of
we're scared of is even crazier. You know what I'm saying? I think
– Oh, like Ebola and stuff.
Yeah, this is – I think Because I started researching a lot after Ferguson because it was so like crazy. It was so like awful in both directions. I'm like, the rioting's crazy, but also the cops seem crazy.
I'm glad you brought it back to a nice neutral topic.
Yeah, no one's going to get mad, but I don't care. But I think humans have a hard time with multi-categories where it's like they're like white cop, black, poor person shot, where it's not that. It's about money, where poor black people live in areas of a lot of money, urban. Poor white people live in trailer parks without a lot of money because they're very spaced out, very sparse. So if you look at it that way, it's more like brackish water of poor and rich, and that combination creates a lot of fear, paranoia, and violence. Where it's like, you know, it's like when you have a city where the billionaires are like 20 feet from like a dude who hasn't eaten in 2 days ready to like grab some cash, it's a lot more likely to have conflict than like poor white people, because it's like they'll explode their trailer park and no one cares because the Picasso isn't down the street.
Mm-hmm.
Where I feel like that's a bigger factor, where cops are almost like security guards for the federal government, where they're just like making sure. And that, you know, I think racism can be created and then pushed because of those factors. It's the same people that say religion causes wars, I think, are the same. It's the same concept as racism causes these violent acts versus racism justifies violent acts and religion justifies wars, because, you know, you have Mao and Stalin, two atheists that needed no justification with religion.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you want to fucking kill a group of people, the easiest way to do it is say, God told me to, let's rally. Mm-hmm. And then you can say religion caused that war. It's the same with like the cops, where it's like white cop, black person. It's security guard, poor person. It's the same with catcalling. Like, you know, that video with the catcalling and everyone's like, everyone's black in it. You know, they edited out the white people. It's like, they definitely didn't. It's not black people catcall more in the city because desperate people are catcalling. White people catcall just as much, but it's an income category. You walk by a trailer park, they say the same shit, but it's 6 miles to the next trailer park.
So you can't make the 10-minute, yeah, you can't make the 10-hour video.
Like, what I say sounds crazy, but do you get the stats and science behind it? Where it's like, it's categories that are bigger and typically about money versus race, and then people justify it with race.
Well, science-wise, a lot of this stuff is like a Pandora's box, because I mean, that's a big thing to do nowadays. It's like, oh, let's get the stats for it.
Well, you can use stats to push anything you want.
Yeah, people do this with gun control and stuff too. Like, the sad thing is, when you're talking about something as big as sociology and politics and, like, you know, wealth division and stuff, there's so many correlations that don't necessarily.
Yeah, that's
anything.
The problem.
There's
that's
this
the
great,
fucking problem.
There's this great website where somebody, they had access to a huge database of things. And one of the things you could do is switch it the other way around. You can just say.
So interesting. I totally know what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. You can just go, you can like, it can search for things that are correlated. So you don't try and make a hypothesis. You do, you search for these things that are related.
Like, what can justify your opinion?
Right, right. And what's just so funny about this site, though, is when you do it that way, when you do it backwards, like, that, just like, I'm going to look for some random correlation, you come up with the weirdest shit. Like, it'll be like, you know, license plate. Length, or, you know, the cost of a vanity license plate is correlated with infant death syndrome, and then there'll be this other one that's like, you know, the price of gasoline in Montana is correlated with like the murder rates. And what's so awesome about it, though, is you get a pretty – this site makes this pretty little plot for you that shows the correlation. You know, and you can pick out whatever you want.
Okay, I listen to this podcast. It's called Intelligence Squared U.S. Debates, where – that's pretty much the same thing, where you'll hear two of the most compelling arguments for opposite sides, and then you're like, we're so fucked.
Right.
Because, like, I will buy either side for most things. Like, you know, justifying, you know, wage disparity or not. You know, and, like, one side will argue it, the other side argue it. I'm like, fuck, they're both right. Like, what is this?
Yeah. Well, the really important thing to always remember in anything, science included, is just, like, correlation does not imply causation. We don't
100%. The reason I got obsessed with Ferguson is I knew a guy, not super well, but I knew him. He was a comic. And he got shot and killed by the LAPD, unarmed, completely random, white. And it got zero press coverage. And like a few months later, Ferguson happened. And obviously, it's like everyone knows Ferguson. That's what got me down this rabbit hole. I probably wouldn't have been that obsessed if I wasn't, but I wanted to know why. And it's for sure that there's a lot of racially motivated, horrible things that happen with cops and people. But it is absolutely a fact that there are forces pushing the branding of racist cop. Because you'll see white people also being shot, not as often, but I think it does have to do with like fear and lack of training and shit like that. And I think a lot of times poor neighborhoods have more just awful things happen to them. I just don't think cops patrol trailer parks. And if they did, they would shoot a lot more white people because they're doing crazy shit there. But it's like there's nothing to guard. Uh-huh. It's in the middle of the country. It's like we got to keep this maple tree safe. It's like, no, cities have like all the shit.
Yeah, it's our whole system set up in a kind of a weird way where like the entire, you know, swath of country helps make the laws, but they, you know, they're enacted on like a small number of actual counties throughout
the
country.
This is a mind fuck.
I think this has actually been true of like every civilization. This has been going, that general concept, the idea that there's people out in the vast land have to always interact with the people who move to the cities. It's always been the cities versus.
Right. You know, and that's why it's not racial. Because if you read about ancient Rome and all that stuff, you'll read about all the groups never change. It's just like who's in the groups keep changing. And it seems to be based on income and desperation level.
Well, and just the short-term history.
Totally. I
mean, just because it's a common phenomenon that happens to people doesn't mean that the short-term components aren't real.
I think we can think our way out of it now with policies and training and shit. That's why science is so necessary. I don't think cops are trained at heightened heart rates, and that's why they do these crazy things when they're scared.
Mm-hmm.
That's my theory. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah. I think the part that's bothered me the most is just we mentioned it earlier, the inability to just say, okay, maybe this cop was wrong. And I think that's changing a little bit.
You're right. Totally. It's like, what side are you on type thing?
For a while, that was, I think, a big problem. It's just like, the answer cannot be, there's no such thing as a mistake. Because or not just a mistake, there's no such thing as a cop who did something
wrong. I'd retract my whole theory after you just saying that because I just realized I'm in the same boat. I'm trying to look for a tidy way to explain everything when it's literally just like shit happens. Like people fuck up.
Yeah.
You know?
And just it has to be like sometimes you say that person was wrong.
Right.
And, you know, they're going to get fired.
And you, by the way, you saying that, by the way, will infuriate a demographic who's like, well, that's the problem. It's a whole system, not an individual. And then other people will be like, that's fucking dead on because it's about individual. People are becoming so tribal. It's like, do you ever feel that way? That like sentence you say, you're like, this is going to either enrage people or make people on my side. And it's just, we just got to fucking calm down.
Yeah, that's I almost got that. We just need to calm down.
That
should be a bumper sticker right there.
I almost got bit by a fucking rattlesnake today. And that's what I should be scared of. Not the shit that doesn't affect me whatsoever. But this has been. This is my favorite podcast I think I've ever done.
Oh, wow.
Because I get to just like spiral about shit, like mental shit.
Awesome.
Science is fun.
Yeah, it is. Comedy's fun too.
Do you think there's a lot of science in comedy? Or do you think it's more
The way I
emotional?
Go about it, I don't know how most comics do it because I'm not like most comics, but definitely I'd go about it scientifically. I think actually that's one of my biggest problems because sometimes I overthink it when I'm on stage and that's the wrong time to think about it.
You got to be in the moment.
Yeah. Like yesterday I was just like, wow. And like the punchline I told you about, I was just like, oh, crap. You know, I had to internalize that. They didn't understand that this was a parallel.
I think it's comparable to banging where you're like, you got to be in the moment, but you also can't be – you have to, like, make sure you're doing a good job.
Right, right.
Or you're like, because if you're too in the moment, you'll launch too early. You know, but if you're not in the moment at all, you're like, pump rate is really weird and robotic.
You can't come out all needy, you know, just like, am I doing this right?
Right.
Or the other way around, just like, hey. It's
all about me.
Yeah.
There's two – you know, you're either a narcissist or you're an affirmation-seeking donkey. And I think it's in the middle. Everything's in the middle, and we should all just calm down.
Yeah.
The truth is somewhere just in the fucking gray area that isn't about Facebook. Because, our brains are addicted to cortisol. But that's a whole other thing. All right. You can spread this around with hashtag why didn't they laugh. So it'd be WD, why didn't they laugh. Hashtag WDTL or WD, TLOL. Why didn't they laugh? Subscribe, comment, rate. If you're pissed off, tell me. If you're not, tell me that too. Or if you're just trying to, you know, make it work like me and Kevin and just want to stay in the middle and not be enraged either way, that's probably the right move. But yeah, do you have anything coming up, like any road stuff?
I'll be in Seattle in June.
And we're doing a show together in May.
We're doing a show. That's right. Yep.
Yeah, at the Ice
May
House.
8th at the Ice House.
May 8th at the Ice House. You can see me and him together. And I will be Pechanga Casino this weekend. And next weekend, I will be in Minneapolis at a comedy club. And then I got a bunch of other shit. But if you OwenBenjamin.com, you know, hit me up. But this has been a blast, man.
Yeah, that's great.
Why didn't they laugh? Peace. Why didn't they laugh?
You suck!
That's not funny.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.